certainly have an excellent audience for this midweek service. Attendance has been so good this meeting, and I don't know how much of a boost it's been to everybody else, but it's sure been a boost to me. I'm encouraged by the interest that you've shown. Some of you have been bringing your friends and neighbors. Some of you have made special efforts to be here yourself. I appreciate that. It's good to have visiting the services tonight, Dolores Flannery from way down in Kentucky. She came up and visiting during their school break and made a point to be at the meeting a few nights. We appreciate getting to see her again. She and Sandy have taken a vow of silence for the rest of this week, I believe. So if you hear something explode, you'll know they weren't able to keep that vow. I've enjoyed associating with each of you, that especially the ones I've been in the homes of this week, and not only to renew old acquaintances, but also to get to meet some of the new members here. And I'm so appreciative of the hospitality you've shown and the kindnesses that you've manifested toward us, and I just want you to know how much I appreciate it. I suppose there's not very many events in life that are as moving and significant as are such things as a marriage or a wedding or the death of one of your loved ones. These different events of human life that occur in all of us as life certainly are high points. I remember participating in several weddings that occurred in this building. Remember seeing the bride walk down in white. Remember watching Brother Halbrook or Brother Warnock or participating myself in the wedding. It comes down to the point where that the preacher says, do you... this person's name, whether it's was George and Leanne or someone else, do you, George, take this one Leanne called to be your lawful wedded wife? Do you promise to love her in sickness and health, in poverty and wealth, and forsaking all others to cleave to her and her only, so long as the both of you shall live? This is said to be taking the marriage vows. And it is before an audience of people that a person says to his mate, I promise to love you and you only, so long as the both of us shall live. The book of Ecclesiastes warns about the necessity of not breaking vows of that nature. In Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 2, be not rash with thy mouth, and let not thine heart be hasty to utter anything before God, for God is in heaven and thou upon earth, therefore let thy words be few. And what is true of all vows is certainly true of that vow, the marriage vow, that it ought not to be something that is rushed into and a vow that is lightly taken. But then when it is made, it should be honored before God so long as the both of you should live. In the last book of the Old Testament, the book of Malachi chapter 2, the prophet had somewhat to say to Israel because they were breaking their marriage vows. And as he wrote in chapter 2, listen to how he calls to mind the fact that there's been a covenant made, not only between the two parties, but between them and God as well. In chapter 2, verse 14, yet you say, wherefore? Because the Lord hath been witness between thee and the wife of thy youth, against whom thou hast dealt treacherously. Yet is she thy companion and the wife of thy covenant. And did he not make one, yet hath he the residue of the Spirit. And wherefore one, that he might seek a godly seed. Therefore take heed to your spirit, and let none deal treacherously against the wife of his youth. For the Lord, the God of Israel, saith that he hateth putting away. For one covereth violence with his garment, saith the Lord of hosts. Therefore take heed to your spirit, that you deal not treacherously. So the Lord said he hated the putting away that was going on in Israel. And inasmuch as he is a Lord that does not change, we can know for sure that he hates the divorce and remarriage that is going on in our society. In a time whenever so many marriages are failing, we need to be reminded of the sacred commitment between a man and his wife, and talk about not only what the Bible says about the sinfulness of divorce and remarriage, but perhaps even more importantly, what we need to make a marriage work once you enter into one. Not only just get up here and say, now don't divorce, but talk about what you need to do to make that a happy home and a joyous relationship between two Christians. The old timers used to talk about the sailors going out to sail the seven seas, the Atlantic Ocean, the Pacific, the Indian, and the others. And they said that the seas are filled with dangers that cause many to lose their lives. Now, I'd like to talk about sailing the seven seas this night with you, about the seven seas that have to do with marriage and where so many of them fail. And the first sea I want to talk about is the sea of communication, because some marriages break down in their communication between the husband and the wife. In 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter, the apostle talks about the husband-wife relationship. And in chapter 3, verse 7, he says this to the husbands. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. Notice the statement here that you dwell with her according to knowledge. There has to be some understanding between the two of you that you come to learn to work together. And that involves communication between two people. There are times that we need to understand the difference between a man and a woman in so far as physical makeup is concerned. A woman is not made like a man. We're in a time whenever we're trying to talk about equality of the sexes. And in many respects, we are equal. I don't think for a minute that a man is any more intelligent than a woman, and he's certainly not as pretty to look at. Isn't that right, Mike? But I tell you what, there's a difference in our physical makeup. You put a man and a woman together in a weightlifting contest, and you know the man's going to be able to lift more weight than the woman is. And we need to learn the differences that there are between us and not expect out of one another that which is impossible to perform. There are emotional makeups that are different. Now, I'm dealing in an area of generalizations, and I know there are exceptions to everybody's rule. But generally, women have more of an emotional makeup and give an emotional reaction to things, and men a more reasoned and logical reaction to things. We need to understand that difference between us. And then there's also a mental differences that we have in the way we look at things and think about things. And when we dwell together according to knowledge, we learn to dwell together in light of these differences. We are different. And because we are different, we complement one another. But sometimes in a marriage, because we're different and don't see everything exactly alike, walls of separation begin to come between us, and we quit talking to one another. I'm afraid there are a lot of marriages that are still existing on paper, but there's not any communication goes on between the husband and the wife. And there are two divorced people living under the same roof. When these walls of communication began to break down, then this is one of the dangers of the seven C's of marriages that caused many a person to fail and to go to the divorce courts. You need to be talking to one another. And you know, the way we communicate is not limited just to what we say with our mouth. If you don't believe that, I can turn and give Corey a look with my eye that tells him, you just wait till we get home. I don't have to say a thing with my mouth, do I? And you reckon you could say some things to your mate that maybe the way you look at her, or maybe the disapproving frown that's on your face, or something else communicates to one another. And you can communicate in a positive way in the same way. I've gone to some get-togethers that we've had at church and church people together, and just sensed that a couple were really feeling warmly toward each other by the way they looked at each other and the way that they touched each other when they were there. They were communicating to each other, though they might not have ever said a word to one another. How we communicate with one another has a lot to do with how good our marriages are. And this is one of the C's on which many marriages fail. Communicate your love toward one another. A wife might be able to do it by preparing a special meal for her husband. And a husband might be able to do it just by sending a card to his wife or leaving one at home as he goes off to work that says something to her that says, I love you and I'm thinking about you. And I've said this many times before, and I'd say it because I need to be reminded of it. Don't wait until your mate is decked out in a casket and go down and buy her two dozen red roses that don't mean a thing to her. They're just a testimony to your friends that you love her. Tell her now while she's still living, and it'll do a lot more to help your marriage relationship than it ever will when you wait until it's too late. I'll never forget a statement that Brother Hazelwood made from this pulpit when he said, the best thing I ever did for myself was to love my wife and let her know that I love her. And I think I've understood a little more as years gone by what he was saying. When she feels loved, home runs smoother, doesn't it? So you need to be sure you're communicating that to one another. Here's another C that many of them sail on that they fall. And that is the concern and care for one another that ought to exist. Turn with me to Ephesians, the 5th chapter. And notice the statement that the Apostle Paul made as he talked about the marriage relationship. The best example of the marriage relationship was given by someone that was never married. That is Jesus. You want to look at the role of a husband? Look at Jesus. And if you want to look at the role of a wife, look at Jesus. And Jesus be a good role model for each of you. First of all, let us look at the husband in Ephesians 5 and his role model that he's to follow. I begin reading at Ephesians 5:21. I hope you'll follow along. submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husband as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined to his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband. Now, I said Jesus was the perfect example of a husband. And listen to what he said he was an example in. He said, you have the feeling toward your bride that Jesus had toward his bride, which is the church. He loved the church and gave himself for it. Husband, this puts a great responsibility on us, doesn't it? That it says I must be willing to sacrifice my own self-interest for her self-interest. I must put what is best for me second to what is best for her, because that's what Jesus did. What was best for Jesus was not to die on the cross, but it was the best for the church that he died on the cross. And so he gave up what he wanted in order to promote the church's best self-interest. He said, now that's the role model for a husband. You give of yourself just like Christ gave to the church. Young men, if you're thinking about marrying somebody and you're not willing to give up what's most important to you in order to be with that girl and to have that relationship with her for the rest of your life, you better wait a little while, because you're not ready to get married. Until you love her so much that you can't live without her, and you're willing to give up anything you have in order to be with her, then you're not ready to get married to that person. That's what Jesus showed us about love in the marriage relationship. He gave himself for her. And notice another thing that it says about it. He said that not only did he give himself for her, but he loved that we should love her as we love our own bodies. I've never known anybody in his right mind. There have been people get mentally ill that there would be exceptions of this with reference to. But I've never known anybody in the right mind that inflicted pain on their own body. People just don't pick up a hammer and say, I'm going to hit my thumb with a hammer because I just like doing it. They usually try to protect their own body. And he said, you love your wife just like you love your own body. You ought not ask her anything you wouldn't be willing to do yourself. And if you think that's something you wouldn't be willing to do, you ought not ask her to do it. That's the role model Jesus gave us with reference to the wife. To love her like we love our own body. And then he said we ought to nourish and cherish our wives. That is, that we try to provide an environment that is conducive to their well-being and good health and their own self-fulfillment, even as we look out for one for ourselves. There might be some opportunities come to you in business that if you just move there, that, boy, you can really go up in your company. Well, one of the questions you ought to ask yourself is, what's it going to do to my mate? Can she be happy there? Can she be contented there? Will she be self-fulfilled there? And you need to provide an environment for your mate where that can be accomplished. And then he said, you cherish your wife. If I understand what that means, it means that you consider her the most precious possession that you have. I've gone into different people's homes and seen some of the things that they cherish. They'll bring out, maybe it is a shotgun that they bought that's got a special engraving on it. They'll say, boy, this is gun. I'm proud of this gun. You could offer them $1,000 for it and they wouldn't take anything for it. Now, if you come to my office, I'll pull out a book that's got David Lipscomb's signature in it, and I cherish that. We all cherish different things, but what ought to be at the top of the list is that the wife ought to be the thing you cherish more than anything else in the world, next to your relationship with God. And you ought to esteem her that way. For a precious, virtuous wife is a gift from God, so say the Proverbs. And as Jesus was an example to us in a role model for a husband's love for his wife, we can profit and learn from that example. I see husbands sometimes violating that. I'll go into homes and they'll have a whole row of shotguns lined up there. They cost them hundreds of dollars each. And then I'll go to sit down on a couch that is as threadbare as it could be. They spend money on themselves. Anything they want, they go get. But their wife never can have a new dress, never can have a new pair of shoes, never can have furniture to be proud of in their house. And I ask myself, where's the concern of that man? Why, it's spent on himself, isn't it? And that's one of the things that causes marriages to fail. If you want to make your marriage better, show some care and concern for your wife. And wives, that's not a one-way street. Paul told the women, the older women, to teach the younger women to love their husbands. That means it ought to come back as well as it goes in. Look, what makes him happy? What have you done lately to make him feel like he's something you're proud of, and that you love him and feel close to him and showed your concern and your care? It works two ways, doesn't it? That's one thing that sometimes we don't get enough of, and marriages fail. One of the country music writers wrote an immoral song, but he said, lonely women make good lovers. You know what that song says? It said where the husband hadn't shown enough love for his wife, we can turn that thing around. Where the wife hasn't shown the concern and care for her husband, she's left him and he's left her vulnerable to the temptation of adultery. And that's called many a marriage to fail. There's another sin that many of them fail on. And that is in the realm of cooperation. This is where the other half of this passage needs to be looked at. Because it talks about the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church. Now, if I understand what's necessary in that, it requires cooperation. Because I can't find anywhere in my Bible where God told me to get out my fist and make my wife submissive to me. Elders are told not to lord it over the flock. And I don't think I have a right to beat my wife into subjection. The only way that's going to work is for us to cooperate together. I've got to agree to take the lead, and she's got to agree to be submissive. That's the same way the church is submissive to Christ as the head, isn't it? Christ doesn't come along and force us into submission against our will, but rather it's a voluntary submission. I voluntarily said to Jesus, I accept you as the Lord of my life, and whatever you command me to do, that's what I do. Why? Because I knew Jesus cared for me. He was concerned about my best interest. He gave himself for me. He cherished me and he nourished me because I'm a part of his church. And the wife who sees her husband give up his own self-interest for her, who will nourish her and care for her just like he cares for his own body, she'll voluntarily and willingly submit herself under his leading and under his rulership. I've made some bad decisions in my life. One of them was when I bought the Herdmobile. I bought a car that whenever we pulled up to pick it up, the kids and Sandy all just started laughing at it. We joked about it all the time. I don't think she ever rebelled against me in reference to that car that we bought. We finally got rid of it. But she could have really thrown a fit about all that and made life miserable at home, couldn't she? You see, it takes a voluntary submission that he decides he agrees I'll take the leadership in making the decisions. And she says, because I know you care for me and you're concerned for me and you love me, I'll follow where you lead. And she's followed me from Florida into Indiana, from Indiana into Ohio, from Ohio into Kentucky. Weldon can talk about a lot more states than I can like that, can't you, Weldon? But you couldn't have made all those moves if Betty had set her foot down and said, I'm not going. I won't be near Mama. You go where you want to go, but I'm going to stay right here. It took a voluntary partner in order to have that kind of relationship. And that's the way it takes for the marriage to work, that cooperation between the two of you. Well, another thing that it takes a commitment in order to make marriage work. And that's another C on which a lot of marriages fail. In the 19th chapter of Matthew, Jesus was faced with a question about divorce and remarriage. And people asked Jesus, is it lawful to put away your wife for every cause? You know, if he'd have gone up and down the streets of Beaver Creek or Dayton and asked the radio talk show host, they'd say, oh yeah, if y'all are unhappy together and there's not a spirit of love, just go find some other relationship. And if he'd gone into most of the churches in our lands, they'd say, oh no, we ought to be committed to each other in marriage. Well, then you say, what happens if somebody divorces his wife? Well, that's unfortunate, but we'll accept it anyway. And there's no real genuine commitment to what this passage teaches. But listen to what Jesus said as we look here. In Matthew 19, verse 3, and the Pharisees also came unto him, tempting him and saying unto him, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? And he answered and said unto them, have ye not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh. Wherefore there shall no more be twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. Notice the statement. Marriage is a relationship with God joined together. And he warned, don't let any man put this asunder. They say unto him, why did Moses then command to give a writing of divorcement and to put her away? He saith unto them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, suffered you to put away your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery, and whosoever marrieth her which is put away, doth commit adultery. Here is the statement that shows that marriage is a relationship that we're to be in till death do us part. God puts it together, and man ought not to put it asunder. And in 1 Corinthians 7 and Romans 7, he said we're married till death. Now that takes a commitment, don't it? There are going to be times, if you're honest, now you talk to some people that don't mind lying, they'll say this isn't so. There are going to be some times in your marriage where that you get to fussing with each other so much, you'll just be ready to throw up the towel and walk away. Now, I've heard one or two couples that said, we never had a cross word in all our marriage. I ought to preach a sermon on lying after it. Sandy and I never fight. We just get in arguments that the neighbors can hear. And you know what makes it work? It's not because it's always been pleasant. I haven't always been this good to her. It's because we made a commitment to each other. We were committed to one another, to stay married to each other, and to make each other happy till death do us part. And this idea that some people have about a marriage, that it's always peaches and creams and roses, that's not what it's all about. I went over and talked to the church at Danville last Sunday, I believe it was. Been a while went by. And one of the dear old ladies there is named Sister Hartsoff. I've known them now for about 20 years. 10 years ago, Brother Hartsock had a stroke, and he's been bedfast ever since. Sister Hartsock has waited on him hand and foot for 10 years. That's what marriage is, in a commitment. If you're not ready to make that kind of commitment to somebody that you love, don't think about getting married, because that's what marriage is about, that you are committed to one another. The alarm clock's off again. Snuffy, will you turn it off? Get him to quit pulling on his socks over there. He's got that thing stuck down in his sock. Well, let's look at another one of the big C's that some people lose. Some people stumble with reference to courtship. Boy, they're mighty powerfully good on this before we get married, aren't we? But once we get married, it's all over. But listen to what 1 Corinthians 7 says about what the relationship ought to be. In the 7th chapter of 1 Corinthians, verses 32 through 34, Paul is writing in the middle of a lesson that's designed for some people going through some hard times. These are people that are faced with persecution because they're Christians. People who might be asked to give up their life just because they confess, I believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. And Paul is saying to these Christians, in view of these circumstances, it's probably better for you not to marry. But in the midst of this discussion, in order to show why it's better, he points out that in a marriage relationship, a man's got to be concerned for the well-being of his wife. Whether the man that is single is only concerned about himself. Now, I'm interested in what he said about the married relationship, because it shows how we should be trying to be committed to make each other happy. Listen to the statement in 1 Corinthians 7, beginning at 32. But I would have you without carefulness. I don't want you anxious and full of cares about things pertaining to this life. He that is unmarried careth for the things that belong to the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he that is married careth for the things that are of the world, how he may please his wife. There's a difference also between a wife and a virgin, that is, an unmarried woman and a married. The unmarried woman careth for the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and in spirit. But she that is married careth for the things of the world, how she may please her husband. Now, what he says about the married is not that they're sinful and what they're doing is wrong, but rather that's just the way it ought to be. A man that is married ought to be concerned with how to please his wife. And a woman that is married ought to be concerned with how to please her husband. And this is where some of these things of courtship come in. To give her the attention that she needs. And she give you the attention you need. And in case where that is, a lot of times marriages fail because there's not any of it present in a marriage. You probably remember the story about the old man and old woman sitting on the front porch rocking in their old rocking chairs, and he had reading his paper, and he heard Ethel sniffing a little bit. He said, "What's the matter, Ethel?" He said, "I don't believe you love me." He just kept rocking and said, "Now, Ethel, 55 years ago when we married, I told you I loved you, and if I ever change my mind, I'll let you know." One lady said, "I think I loved it, liked it a lot better when you loved me less and told me a lot more often." There's a lot of truth in that, isn't it? We need to be concerned with what makes the other happy. It make her day real bright to take her out to dinner somewhere tonight. Do that. Enlighten her day. Make her happy. And if it make his day bright for you to sit down and watch a basketball game with him on television, why don't you do that? Because these are the things that you used to do when you courted each other. We're just getting introduced to courting again around our house. Jenny's a sophomore. And boys are beginning to hang around. I think Jim Pickard notices how that works. He got him a big flash water to get rid of him with. Jenny don't like sports, but when that boy came over and used to sit down every Sunday afternoon and follow the television with a football game on, guess where she was? And it usually works that boys don't like to go shopping, but you go out to the mall some Saturday and you watch these girls walking up and down shopping, there'll be a boy tagging along with them. They learn to be interested in what the others are interested in, but as we grow older, sometimes that part just falls by the wayside, don't it? And many times the marriage begins to drift apart. Well, another thing that we need is we need to be sure that we fulfill the needs of companionship. In Genesis, the second chapter, the purpose of the marriage relationship was that man might find a companion suitable to him. Do you remember the statement made in Genesis 2 that God brought all the animals to pass before Adam? And Adam saw that there was a mate for every animal of the field, but there was not a companion suitable to him. Now you might have one of the nicest French poodles you ever had. And you might have a cat, and you might love that cat, but it's not the same as a mate. And so in order to fulfill the needs of man, God caused a deep sleep to fall on man and took from his side a rib, and from that rib he made woman. And this was a helper suitable to man. This was someone to go through life with, to be a support to one another. How many times have you needed the complementary late relationship that there is in a home, of what the woman can provide and what the man can provide, and they fit together and supplement each other. Brother Irvin Lee held a meeting for us while I was here, one of the kindliest preachers that I've ever met in my life. But Brother Lee would be only half Brother Lee if it weren't for Sister Lee, wouldn't it? She was his right arm. Many people come into our house and talk about how well decorated it is. Now, if you want to see what it looked like without Sandy, come look at my office. I think there's a desk under all that pile of books that I have on it. But she's the one that knows how to pick colors and how to decorate the house. I've even taught her how to mow the yard a little bit. But it takes both of you working together, doesn't it? And that kind of companionship to lean on one another when times are hard. Do you remember the statement in the book of Proverbs that a two-fold cord is, a single cord is easily broken, but where there's two there, that it's a lot harder to break. That when one of them falls, the other one is there to lift him up. There are times that I come in from work or from preaching, and I'm, like they said, as low as a snake's belly. Somehow that's the time when Sandy's stronger. And she'll jack me up and encourage me. And there are times that I come in, she's just down as she can be. And I have to pick her up and say, let's go out and do something. What would it be like if when I'm down like that, there wasn't anybody there for me? It'd be a lot harder, wouldn't it? And God recognized the need we had for each other to be a companion and a help as we face the problems of life. Can you imagine coming home from a doctor and being diagnosed as having a severe terminal illness and not having anybody there to share the fears and the anxieties and the cares that you have about that? We need each other. And that's why God gave us the marriage relationship. And finally, another one of the relationships that we have in marriage, another one of the C's, is children that come along in marriage. And oh, how life has been blessed since the coming of our children. You can remember the joyous occasions that come in the home. The 8th grade graduation we've gone through, and some of you all already gone through high school. Tears went down my cheeks as I tried to take pictures of that. And the time that Corey sang a solo at school and I tried to get down in front of him and his face white with fear and take his picture, and so he wouldn't look at me, because I knew if he looked at me he might quit. But I got his picture and he said I wasn't scared a bit. Those things are memories, and I tell you, the greatest memory I think I have is the time when Jenny came forward and was baptized right here in this building. And the sharing of those joys with you, as there were tears in the eyes of many of you as there were in ours. What a blessing our life has had because of our children. I express sympathy to people who are unable to have children because they're missing a large portion of the blessings of life. And even as it is with every other relationship with our children, there's responsibility. The responsibility to teach my children the Bible falls foremost on me as the father. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. I don't know where this idea ever slipped into our thinking, that it's the mother's responsibility to do all the training of the children in religious matters. That's why the little boys grow up thinking that church is just for women and kids, because the fathers don't take the leadership in that. But I need to sit down with my children, with our Bibles open, and tell them about Noah and tell them about Moses, and tell them about Paul, and tell them about Peter and Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They need to see me go by their beds at night and bow down and pray with them. Whenever my children grow up, they might decide not to be Christians. But I hope it's not because their father hasn't done what he ought to do in teaching them the commandments of God's Word. And of course, the mother has her part to do as well. She's to guide her home, and she is to also do like Eunice and Lois in imparting the gospel to her children. I remember my mother, as she'd be washing dishes, telling us stories about biblical characters or singing with us. Just about every time we got in the car to go to worship, we'd sing. She came up to visit me not long ago, and I asked her why we did that. She said, we kept 7 kids. That's the only way we keep all of you quiet. Keep you from fussing and fighting with one another. I hadn't been that wise. But they are children that are a responsibility and a blessing in our lives. But isn't it unfortunate that in our society, children have become a curse? People talk about going through life, if they had it to do all over again, they wouldn't have any children. They say this is a problem that you never get rid of. What a difference in attitude that is to what the psalmist said, that these were a gift from God. And blessed is the man who has his quiver full of them. What a change in attitude toward our little folks that we see in biblical times and today. Here's the mother and daddy that run off and forget about their kids and don't try to give them the guidance and the discipline they need. Then the children get to be renegades and they wish they didn't have any. The problem's not with the kids, the problem is with the mother and daddy, because they've let their marriage stumble and fall over this sea. Marriage is a wonderful relationship. It's one of God's gifts and God's blessings to us. Just like the sunshine and the rain, the fruitful seasons and the harvest, just like the animals of the field are blessings from God, the marriage relationship was something that God created, and when he'd finished it, he said, "This is very good." And we need to view it that way and start working in our homes to make them the kind of haven that they ought to be from the trials and tribulations of life. Home is sometimes viewed as two ways. One man comes home from his job and he says, "This is hell on earth right here at home." And another one comes home and he's had all of these confusions at work and all of these pressures, and he's glad to get home because it's a haven for the little of the soul. What's your home like? Is it a haven or is it a battleground? It's not the kind of place that God wants it to be. Go to the mirror and start working on the first person you see to make that part of it right. And if other person will do the same thing, you can improve that home and make it a better place, a place of happiness and peace. Because that's what God wants.